Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Today, we have three rounds of excitement where we take apart the important issues in the news today. In round one, former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates testifies in front of a Senate subcommittee today about her communication with the Trump administration about General Michael Flynn. Does she provide damning evidence of Russian collusion or just another vague inference?
Here's a hint. No.
In round two, on Sunday, 4 million French voters spoiled their ballots or voted blank to indicate their disgust for both Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen. The highest number in over 50 years. What do we learn from what appears to be a rejection of the entire political establishment in France? And in round three, Jared Kushner and his sister Nicole are facing criticism after allegedly using her brother's name and White House access during a conference in China in which Kushner companies sought wealthy investors using the EB-5 visa program. Has international politics become part of the Trump family business? All this and more live on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Well, Lee, it looks like we're back for another Monday and lots of fun. And, you know, former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates is even now testifying. Her and James Clapper testifying in front of the Senate subcommittee. And
I was watching.
Yes. And interestingly, well, I watched until I started, you know, dozing off and drifting off to sleep, because I found that once again, we've gone from an absolute conviction that there was collusion between the Trump administration and the Russians to theoretically the Russians could blackmail Flynn because he lied about something that doesn't really have anything to do with the Russians. It's like he talked to somebody. He didn't say that he talked to somebody. So in theory, they could go after him for that and blackmail him. Once again,
that's Yates' theory. Exactly right. That's what she's saying in front of Congress right now.
That's it.
In
theory, theoretically. So once again, from the left, as the centrist Democrats and establishment Democrats refer to us as the Bernie bros. Being a Bernie bro, and I guess in a way, the Trump voters, they've been referred to as the deplorables. So they proudly wear their deplorable buttons, and I proudly wear my Bernie bro buttons. But we see the same thing, that there is an attempt to relitigate the election and say that Hillary didn't lose. That's what it all comes back to me. And all I see is lots and lots and lots of smoke, lots and lots of vague inferences and accusations. But today, this was going to be the blow. Remember, the blowout before was allegedly when Michael Flynn, what did he ask for? He asked for, it was about a month ago, where he said he would speak if they would give him, immunity, amnesty, whatever the case. And that was going to be it. It was all over then. That was going to blow everything up. We're going to get it all.
By the way, I believe Michael Flynn is here legally, so he wouldn't technically need amnesty.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
If he snuck into the country.
Yes. Well, amnesty, immunity, that all works for me, whatever the case may be. But again, I'm looking at this. This is the end all be all. And once again, we get another snoozer. What are your thoughts, Lee?
Well, see, I think you think this is to save Hillary.
Yes.
And I think this is to distract from U.S. policy in Syria. That's what I believe. Now, again, this is conjecture. We don't know the motive.
Right.
But I really, and by the way, I think the Hillary part of it is part of it. I'm not saying there's one motive here.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I know. I know that if the American people actually knew that their tax dollars were used in Syria to back Islamist rebels, people who were waging jihad, and if they knew, as I know, because I went there, I went to Lebanon, and I interviewed refugees, if they knew, if the American people knew that their tax dollars had been used to kill Christians, for jihadists who were killing Christians, not just killing Christians, but trying to wipe Christianity off the face of the earth. And I know that because I interviewed Louis Sacco, who's the Patriarch of Babylon, the head of the Iraqi Catholic Church. And that's what I asked him, and that's what he said. It's on video. It's up on YouTube. I think the American people would be stunned by this. And if the American people realized what's going on right now in Syria, which is the Russians. And again, you're listening to Radio Sputnik. So obviously this is Russian propaganda, obviously. But here's the thing. People can look this up for themselves. I challenge anybody, look this up for yourselves. Look up the facts for yourselves on this. If they understood that the Russians had actually gotten Iran and Turkey, who are on different sides right. of the Syrian battle, to both agree to this safe zone thing that's going on in Syria right now, which even Mattis this morning admitted is working.
Yeah.
Right? Here's the thing. For 7-8 years now, and by the way, this is important because Obama, look, let's talk about it briefly. The Syrian civil war started because of Barack Obama, because he kicked off the Arab Spring. He kicked off the Arab Spring by having what's called a New Beginning speech in Cairo about 6 months after he came into office. He basically gave the Ikhwan, which is another word for the Muslim Brotherhood, he gave the Ikhwan the okay to start an uprising. He had them in the front row there in Egypt, in Cairo, during that New Beginning speech. Then the Arab Spring started, and it quickly became a jihadist uprising. Leave out places like Tunisia. Quickly, in places like Egypt, it became a jihadist uprising. And we don't like the jihadist in America because they're the terrorists, right? These are the bad guys. So then what happened was this started the Syrian civil war, which was backed by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, our quote-unquote ally, and that's what's happened. So what I'm seeing today is Yates is out there, and look, the point of Yates testifying, people forget what happened in January, Garland, which is the FBI.
Are you kidding me? Half the time I can't remember what happened last Saturday.
But you'll remember
but mine's
this.
Age-related. So
I know, I know. You're an older American, yes, because you're older than me, I can say that. But you'll remember what happened in January. What did the FBI looked into accusations about Flynn and Russia. And what did they say in January, Garden? Even you in your aged state. What did they say?
They didn't find anything.
Exactly right.
They didn't
What did they say in February when they looked at the transcripts?
They said there was nothing. Clapper testified that there was nothing.
Exactly right.
Now, I would argue that while we can talk about the Syrian the regime change in the and President Obama and Secretary Clinton, I would argue that this whole mess really started in 2003 when the neocons got a grip back on American foreign policy with the invasion of Iraq, and that to
I'm not in favor of the Iraq invasion. Right. My point, though, is I honestly believe, Garland, that if Americans looked at the situation in Syria objectively, as I have done and tried to report for the past several years, since 2013, they would conclude something shocking, which is that Russia was better in Syria than the United States. I'm going to say that again because it's shocking, but I challenge anybody listening to look it up for themselves. Russia did a better job in Syria than the United States has.
Which I think returns us to this point, and that is that one of the reasons that Americans don't get an opportunity to evaluate some of the things like where are our tax dollars going in the Middle East? Who are we supporting right. and who are we not supporting? Is because the mainstream media spends a lot of time taking us down these rabbit holes that go nowhere. They spend a
right.
lot of time
That's right.
making all of this smoke. You know, I keep seeing these articles and they keep talking about smoke with the Russian collusion. There's smoke, smoke, smoke.
Yes.
And every time we hear a definitive statement, like something from James Clapper, when we hear a definitive statement with some evidence, what James Clapper said was, there is no evidence of collusion. Now, we keep right. hearing things like James Comey last week say, well, look, we believe this and we have high confidence of this, but we have yet to see any evidence. And my belief is just as here. Once somebody gets on the stand, what we keep hearing, we keep getting directed down a road that leads us to really litigating the fact that the mainstream establishment, okay, theoretically, the mainstream, we thought the mainstream and extreme establishment political powers in this country had lost during the election. Sadly, they're right back in the White House in a lot of ways, and that both people on both sides are unhappy with. So that, and that's a reality. But they felt as though they lost, and they felt as though they lost to an outsider. And I think this is a game we've been playing. And Hillary Clinton was back last week doing the same thing.
That's exactly right. And again, I have to say the usual caveat I have to say, because we're on Radio Sputnik, which is, look, my position on this has been very clear since 2013. Since long before I was on the Russian payroll or whatever I'm on, right, whatever it is, before I was working for Radio Sputnik, I would have the same, if I wasn't working here tomorrow, I'd have exactly the same opinion. This is all a dog and pony show to try to demonize Russia, because they don't want people, in my opinion, to know what we've been doing in Syria, because the Syria thing is a big deal because it created the Syrian refugee crisis. It's destabilized the world, okay? And, you know, I was in the White House today. I was in the White House press briefing room. And by the way, I looked fabulous. You can't tell now.
Did you have the little flower on your jacket?
I did. Of course I did. Well. I was in red. I look fantastic when I go in. I'm a little more casual when we're here on the radio, but I'm a professional, so I try to look good. I was in the White House press briefing today. And, you know, representing myself, I wasn't there through Sputnik or anything like that. And there were about six questions, I want to say, on this Yates thing. And they were all like, for instance, well, does the president stand by firing Flynn? Well, the president also fired Yates. Right. Now, I'll tell you who was good in this hearing today. Chuck Grassley was good. He asked Yates a number of questions. He asked Yates and Clapper, had they leaked? That was a good question.
Yeah, that was a good question.
Right. He also Cornyn was bad. John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, was bad until he got to asking Yates why she refused to go along with the travel ban. Let's just be blunt. I know you don't agree with the travel ban.
Absolutely, I don't.
Travel ban. But when you're the acting attorney general, if you get a determination from the legal analyst that it's legal, your job is to do what? Your job is to defend. As the attorney general, your job is to defend what the White House
is doing. And I will give you this. It was a legitimate question. It was, you know, I'm not going to be, it was a, though I don't agree with the travel ban, it was a legitimate question to ask.
And it shows that Yates is political, and which she is. Clearly, this is political. And it's being driven by the Democrats. And it's also, it is so disgusting to me as a Republican that Lindsey Graham is the dude on the, you know, it's a bipartisan hearing, right? So it's Lindsey Graham, Whitehouse,
mm-hmm.
Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And
why don't we just call it an establishment? Because a lot of times these days when we use that word bipartisan, you got Lindsey Graham's and Chuck Schumer's and John McCain's and different people like that.
It's two Democrats.
Who are people who are of like mind when it comes to all too many of these issues. And I think that I felt all along that a lot of people who are traditional establishment Republicans felt threatened for this reason. Because Donald Trump, though I disagree with him on policy after policy, here's the fact of the matter. He ran outside of the establishment, of the traditional establishment way of doing things. And I think it's a threat to them. And I think they're afraid that in 2020, 2018 years to come, that people who aren't traditional establishment candidates will run outside of the traditional establishment way of doing things and their power is in jeopardy. And that's why I think you see what we call a bipartisan, but I simply call an establishment attack on this. And an establishment attempt to push this Russia thing, because they're afraid that their power could be compromised. And they're afraid that if they don't come up with an excuse other than the fact, and we're going to talk about the same thing going on in France a little bit later in the second segment, they're afraid that if people recognize that the establishment is on the outs, that the establishment is popular anymore, and if they can't push our attention in another direction, that they're going to fall, and independents, that's the future, and I believe independents are going to start getting elected. People who are not directly related and contaminated by one of these shiesty, crooked party leadership establishment.
Well, and Lindsey Graham, too, is obviously bipartisan. Sorry, I was drinking there. I was just finishing a drink there. But anyway, Lindsey Graham is obviously, I'm not implying anything. I was just finishing my drink. But Lindsey Graham and his buddy John McCain, his longtime companion John McCain, are consistently on the wrong side of this. But I got to point out that once again, they're consistently on the wrong side of the Syrian issue as well, which is part of why I began to look at it, because I see these guys as defending this. Now, the other people who are clearly on the other side of this, who's doing the fighting in Syria? This is the other reason I'm suspicious. The CIA.
Yeah.
The CIA, right? The CIA, we know this. The CIA is doing the fighting.
The CIA was involved initially putting the working with the Saudis, putting this mercenary troop group together and trying to do and starting this whole civil war in the first place.
And in fact, this is not remotely conspiratorial at this point. We know this.
Yes.
That the Benghazi situation was part of what was going on in Benghazi is there was a CIA operation where they were picking up weapons and taking them from Benghazi, Libya. And now where were the weapons going? Well, the belief is they were going to the Syrian rebels, you see. So part of what happened in CIA, and the reason both the Democrats and the Republicans didn't really want to talk about Benghazi, everybody gets that Benghazi story wrong, by the way, is because there was a CIA operation that was sending the weapons again. Anybody can confirm this with a little bit of research. It's not hard. And it's not from, it's from every source that you can imagine. We know that two of the guys who were killed were working with the CIA in the CIA, quote unquote, annex.
Well, you know, right now, the Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is going to be, I think, Wednesday, going to be in D.C. to meet with Sergei Lavrov. And they're going to be discussing Ukraine and Syria. And I think that what we continually see is we see some things starting to happen in the Middle East that is contrary to the neocon worldview of projecting American military to power to address everything. And I do believe a lot of this stuff is simply misdirection play. They don't want Americans to see that things could ever work out in any Middle East country without the American military being at the forefront and calling all the shots. That maybe the rest of the world sometimes can't run their own business without us.
Well, what people need to watch out for here in the aftermath of the Yates testimony is what it actually proves. They're doing it for a reason, though. And when we're prepping for the show today, you know, if I have the ability to subpoena somebody and keep calling hearings, I can make something seem suspicious just by continuing to have hearings on it.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
That's the whole smoke thing. They have a smoke machine, and then they say, hey, you know what? There's got to be fire because there's a smoke. But all they got is a smoke machine constantly making smoke.
But the real smoke is, and this is the other thing Grassley was excellent on, was asking Yates, he asked Clapper. He said to Clapper, is it suspicious that 20-something thousand emails that were hacked came after the DNC refused to let the FBI look at the servers? Doesn't this show that you should work with the FBI and not stonewall them? That was a great question.
It was a great point.
And it's a great point. And that's what's really going on here. Look, the DNC stonewalled the FBI and refused to let them allow. The FBI has still never looked at the DNC servers.
I firmly believe they know that it was an inside leak and they don't want anyone else to know. You listen to Fault Lines. We've got a round two coming up. In round two, we're going to talk about the French election yesterday. Big goings on there. You're listening to Fault Line with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
We are back with Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan on Radio Sputnik. Hey, do me a favor. Tell your friends about the show. Let them know what we're doing here. Please
share it
on
Facebook Live. We're also on Facebook Live. Make sure you go there, Sputnik Facebook page. You can like it. You can follow it. And then, hey, you can share this. You can share Fault Lines.
And if you ever want to see what radio looks like, and if you ever want to see why one of us has a face for radio, and that would be me, by the way, because Garland's fantastic looking. I got to say, we got a thing of Garland. We got the picture up there. I have 6 chins. It's not possible to have as many chins as I have. And I've lost weight. That's the thing. Anyway. So did you hear about this election in France? I don't know. I don't know if you heard about it. It made news, I think, over the weekend.
I heard something was going on in France. They have protests or something today. Why would they have protests today, Lee, when they should all be happy and joyous and celebrating?
Because these are far leftist maniacs who will not be happy until the Western civilization is smoking and in ruins. That's why.
But the Western civilization is already smoking in ruins, and I'm far leftist, so how come I'm not happy under those circumstances?
Well, here's the thing. So, you know, you're not as far left as these nut jobs.
I'm pretty far left, dude.
The Antifa, I know, but I'll think you're that far left the day you come in dressed like a ninja. The day you come in dressed all in black. And by the way, I'm going to be hiding under the desk the day that happens.
I'm wearing a motorcycle helmet tomorrow, a black motorcycle helmet with the blacked out things.
It's not the same.
Oh,
it's not the same. Literally the day you come in dressed like a black block and you start smashing the windows of the studio over here. And
like that old Michael Jackson video, you know, I'm bad, where he baseball bat beat up. Never mind. Let's get back to France's election.
Okay.
Let's get back to important things.
So but if you want to dance, the Facebook live cameras are on. And
trust
so if you want to.
You don't want to see me dead. Michael Jackson, I'm not.
I think I do. No, now
Michael
I really
Michael J.
Want.
Fox, maybe, but not Michael Jackson.
Now did you just make fun of Michael J. Fox
no,
having Parkinson's disease? Is that what you did?
You never saw Michael J. Fox dance on that old show that he was on way back when? It was a really hilarious thing.
Okay,
that
good.
Was a
I'm just
throwback.
Trying to make sure
that
you're...
was a throwback joke, my man.
Okay, I'm trying to make sure it wasn't like a shaky joke or something
no,
like that.
No,
that's what
no,
I'm trying to make.
The shaky jokes.
I would hate for you to be in politically incorrect hell. For making that joke, so that's good. And don't make the Janet Reno joke either, because she's no longer with us, that wouldn't work either. So here's the thing. This French election, I will give us both credit. We both called this one. We both said we did not think that Marine Le Pen would win. And this has nothing to do with what I wanted. I would have preferred Marine Le Pen to win. I'm not sure you feel that way. But
Yeah. Well, I hate both. Well, I feel like this election is the same to me. I would prefer that neither one of them win, in fact, Lee. They didn't have anyone win.
How would that work, though? An
empty chair, which I think would be an improvement over what they got.
Well, this is not the way I wanted it to go, but I try to be. Here's the thing about me. Like Iggy Azalea. First things first, I'm the realist, right? So here's the thing. I try to be realistic about stuff. There's just a little Iggy reference
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, Iggy, you ain't, but go on.
They're a little, similar body types. But my point here is, I like to be realistic about things, and I did not think the polls were showing Le Pen far behind. By the way, I said, as you did too, we predicted that Trump would win the 2016 election, right? So I'm not a Debbie Downer either, right? But I did not see her winning. Now, here's what I'm seeing happening with some of my friends on the right. What I'm seeing them do is say, oh, France is over, man. R.I.P. It's over, man. Like, what are they doing? What's the aliens guy? Game over, man. Game over.
Yeah, I love that. That's my favorite
game
guy.
Game over, man. France, game over. Forget it, man. France, game over. Well, you know what? Come on. Like Jim McKay said during the Munich massacre, our worst fears and fondest dreams are seldom realized. And the worst fear is that France is over. Now, but I'll say something. I mentioned this in the prep meeting today, too.
How would we know if France was over? I mean, they drink less wine, they wouldn't eat as many crepes. How would you really know if France was over?
What they're concerned about is the immigrant crisis, which is a serious issue, which has caused terrorism in Paris, which we know about, and other places in France. These are serious issues. But I will say this. Do you know who? This is going to be controversial. And again, you know, Radio Sputnik. But here, but this is true. Try to argue. People can't argue the point on this. Do you know who might save France? Russia.
I was about to say yes, because of Syria. Because the Syrian issue is critical here. However, I'll say this.
Let me just explain. If these safe zones create peace in Syria and the Syrian refugees go back to Syria, this will cut down on the migrant crisis, which is affecting all of Europe, including France. That's my point. So if the Russian proposal that they were the ones who've gotten behind for these safe zones work, well, you know, chalk one up to them. By the way, not that the media is going to give them credit
on that.
Well,
here's the other part of that, too, though. So let me go to the left and talk about that. Yes, I agree. But there are twin crises there are lots of crises in, you know, terrorism, et cetera, in France. But the two big ones, the ones at the forefront, of course, are the issues with terrorist attacks that they've had recently. Right. But the other is unemployment. They've got a terrible unemployment problem. So what I think actually will happen is this. You know, people, it's kind of like, you know, Maslow's pyramid or whatever. When people are once,
Maslow's categories of needs, perhaps? Yeah,
there we go. Yes. Okay. So basically, once you...
I went to college briefly.
Yes. So once you feel safe and secure that you're not going to get gunned down in the street by a terrorist, now you start thinking back about jobs and things like that. So I think what would happen is if the Middle East, if the Syrian crisis is somewhat subsides, right, and the refugee crisis begins to subside, then people are going to be looking at the domestic issues. They're going to be looking at the economy, et cetera. And now we go to Macron. Macron's a globalist. Macron's a banker, investor, and I believe that he's going to have these globalist policies that do what globalist policies do, which is transfer the power out of the states, out of democratic rule, and out into some amorphous blob like the EU or some trade agreement where the people in the countries have don't know what's going on and all the power and all their money leaves them. And so I think ultimately what will happen if the Syrian crisis subsides is that people will be refocused on the fact that they got another globalist Wall Street type tool that's going to give them the shaft. That's my opinion on it.
Well, here's the thing, though. You're trying to separate out the employment issue and the terrorism or migration issue, and those actually, au contraire, mon ami. I think I just proposed to you, by the way, in French. I'm not sure. I have to check my notes.
I think I did.
I'd have to look up Pepe Le
Pew cartoons. A strawberry crepe and a glass of wine, actually.
Possible. But
one of the two.
These things are related. These things are related because what happens is we've seen this time and time again the world over. The refugees come in. There's no jobs for them. They, in fact, the illegal migration or extra legal or whatever creates a worse job situation for everybody because there's a massive influx of, most cases, unskilled labor and people who get upset. And then this starts to create a cycle of things where terrorism then rises out of that. So the employment situation is related. Now, what was interesting about this to me is that Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, I believe.
Yes.
Angela Merkel came
out. Field Marshal? That's old Hogan's Heroes stuff. But something like that. Field Marshal or chancellor or something.
No, it's chancellor.
Baroness.
Sounds good. So Angela Merkel came out and she said she's very happy about Macron.
Well, that doesn't make me feel good.
No, it doesn't make me feel good either because I'm not a big fan of Merkel. And again, she's been awful on this migrant crisis, right? But the fact that Merkel came out and said, now here's the other thing that could save France. She gave some indication. See, the EU thing, let's talk about the EU thing. One of the reasons that Merkel, in particular, is such an advocate of the EU is that the EU's worked out pretty well for Germany.
Yeah.
Right. Like take the Greek crisis, where the Greeks had this huge financial crisis. Who did they owe all that money to?
Germany.
That's exactly right. The Germans, I don't know if you know this, they're into the banking. Have you heard that?
I heard of rumors. Yeah. Deutsche Bank or something like that, huh?
So the German banks have done real well throughout a lot of these crises, right? So in other words, in Greece, that was a big issue. That's the Greeks were very upset. The Greek people were very upset that Germany was basically saying, pay up, you know, we loaned you money. Now, I don't want to get into the weeds on that issue, but as people have learned throughout a couple of world wars, getting help from Germany, you know, it's a mixed bag. There can be some downsides to it. So when Merkel comes out immediately is saying she likes Macron for his pro-European Union stance, which is what she said. She's very clear on that. And hey, like I say, when people say we're from Germany and we're here to help, just be a little careful of that, just a little bit. Don't drink the Vichy water is my point. And so Merkel coming out. Now, Merkel may try to help the situation, but you brought up in the intro today, you brought up a significant thing. This landslide victory for Macron was actually not that much of a landslide. A lot of people don't like this dude.
Let me give you some numbers.
A lot of people don't like him. And there was huge, the voter turnout was very low,
yeah,
right?
Let me give you some numbers. 4 million French voters spoiled their ballot or voted blank. That means just, you know, defaced the ballot in some way, shape. They could have just written the wrong name on it or voted blank to indicate they wanted either.
When you say spoiled, is it possible they let their votes mold?
Like, I'm thinking maybe, or like had put an old fish on it and left it in the sun for a couple of days. That's what I always think was spoiled.
Put it under their armpits.
It comes on the on top of the worst abstention rate in French presidential runoff since 1969, 12 million registered voters stayed away from the polls. Added together, 16 million people, that's one in three French voters, rejected both the candidates. That's not the, and we're getting away from the reason we have this runoff was because the two parties who have ruled France for the last 60 years got rejected. So while Macron, as you so lovingly call him, exactly. While he, quote, won what I will call the unpopular vote, he won the unpopular vote. While he won the unpopular vote, the bottom line is they got some serious problems in France. And the lefties, the their version of the Bernie bros, are over there saying something that I believe. Here's what they're saying. We don't like Le Pen, but you just guaranteed her a victory in 4 years because people are not happy with this globalist foolishness. You know, they're not happy. And what I think here, what I read was the establishment people, the EU people, the Angela Merkels of Europe did everything they could to help Macron. Right. To help this guy. And afterwards, they're all celebrating, saying, hooray, we won. But you know who's not celebrating? The French people. The French people did not have anything to celebrate about. And to pretend, and this is what the establishment always loves to do, to pretend there's a victory where there isn't one, to create a premise. But to try to create a premise with, hooray, France is saved. And they, you know, I tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of going to the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia, where people, you were there, people are marching around, they're screaming, they're yelling, the Bernie people were protesting and everything. But when you saw it on TV, it looked pristine. You thought that everyone was walking around holding hands. That's what I see. They're creating a premise in the mainstream Europe and in the globalist EU Europe that says, whew, boy, we won and everything's okay. And in reality, they still have, you know, a disaster on their hands that I think within 4 years. Oh, the other part of it is this, you know, Macron is going to have to nominate a prime minister. And the prime minister that he nominates must be from the majority party. In all likelihood, he's going to have to nominate a prime minister that's not going to be from his party.
Well, he's got nobody from his party. He's got
around like a year or something, right?
No, I believe literally if I'm off, I'm off by like two. But I don't think there's anybody from his party who's holding parliament seats right now. Right. I believe Macron literally has nobody from his party. So he's assembling a government.
So really, you could only miss it by one if you said nobody.
No, I'm saying it's nobody or like one.
You're
that's
right.
Literally what it is. But I believe it's nobody.
Right.
And by the way, nobody's low, just so you know.
Yeah.
That's a low number. So nobody. So he's having to put together a relatively opposition government. You know, part of what happened is Fillon, who was considered to be the front runner by a lot of people, had a big scandal that he was caught up
in. What's that name again?
Fillon.
Oh, I like that better than Macron.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Fillon was was in this big scandal where apparently he'd been paying his family to do political work that they didn't do, his wife.
Oh, does he have a son-in-law whose last name is Kushner? Next segment. You like the way
Fillon
I segmented?
Means Kushner in French. So it's the French word for Kushner. But there were these other scandals. But I do think, like I say, a lot of people were looking at this. They were hoping. I saw Geert Wilders did not win in the Netherlands recently. And I think I've said this too. I don't know if Le Pen is going to be the candidate in a few years. I don't know if she should be. It feels to me like they might need a new candidate, like that party, the Front National, the National Front. Now, but I'm going to say one other point here.
Which is doing, you know, they're making a lot of moves, too. The Front National is actually working to moderate a little bit. You know what I mean? They're doing a lot of stuff.
Well, here's what it is.
They may smell blood in the water with this Mejon guy screwing everything up, which I'm not happy about.
This is the biggest bogus thing in the world. Here's a drinking game you can do. Listen to the American media, have a bottle of wine, and then take a chug of it every time they call Le Pen far right. She ain't far right. Okay, this is one of the biggest lies in the media.
To me, socially,
no, she's not far right in any way. No, she's not. She's to the left of Bernie Sanders on a lot of issues. The only reason she's quote unquote far right is because she's nationalist. But if you look at communist governments who are not far right, communists ain't far right. Okay, they're often very nationalist. The Soviet Union was very nationalist. China, very nationalist. North Korea, very nationalist. Cuba, et cetera, et cetera. They sing the Internationale, yes. But communist governments are often very nationalist. The reason they call Le Pen far right is they want to associate her with the Nazis, who nobody likes. Nobody likes the Nazis. Okay? And by the way, here's a hint. You shouldn't like the Nazis.
The Nazis
were the national... The National Socialist, right? That's what they were. They were the National Socialist. So this whole bogus thing that calls the socialist right is crazy. This is something that the left media puts forward. It's completely bogus.
But we could play with all kinds of labels. The bottom line is, what do you? Well, let me say this, and this is, I may not agree with you, but I will somewhat substantiate your point with this. We can play with all kinds of labels about who's the nationalist, the far right, and the far left. But what you really got to get down to is, and I think this is the point you're making, what are the policies of the particular person? Because the labels can be very confusing, and the labels can be applied by the media to one particular person when they like or don't like them, or a party when they like or don't like them.
What I'm saying is they use the label against Le Pen to try to make her seem like a Nazi. Right.
So, well, you know, the origins of her party were kind of with the Nazi collaborator. Her father was like, what did he lose, 82 to 18 or something?
But they threw out a guy. They recently, Le Pen was threw out a guy. So that has nothing, again, has nothing to do with it. Anyway, we have more coming up. This EB5 story with Jared Kushner is just starting to get rolled in the media. It's a subject I know a lot about, and it's up next on Fault Lines. With Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome back to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan here on Radio Sputnik, a company owned by Jared Kushner. Yes, that name's back in the news, and it is involving possible influence peddling. This is going to shock you. A company owned by Jared Kushner's family is apologizing for mentioning the White House advisor at an investment conference in China. Nicole Kushnermeyer, she's the sister of White House advisor and president.
Wait, did you say Kushnermeyer?
Kushnermeyer.
I see.
Yes. So that's hyphenated married
okay,
name.
Okay, good. Just checking.
But if you're running around the world and you're trying to make money in China, you probably want to throw that Kushner in there. What do you want to bet? It was probably just Nicole Meyer until he ended up in the White House, and then it got high. No, I'm just throwing that out. I'm not saying that it hasn't always been Kushner Meyer, but let me get to my point, and maybe you'll see where I'm going with this. So the Kushner Company, they're in Beijing, and they're having this big investor conference, and she just happens to mention her brother's role in the administration during a pitch for her family's property. She says, in 2008, my brother, Jared Kushner, joined the family company as CEO and recently moved to Washington to join the administration. She had said at her conference.
She's leaving out a detail there. Put a bookmark in that. She's leaving out a detail about why he became CEO, by the way. A little minor detail.
Yes. And she said it didn't mean for the comment to be interpreted as an incentive for investors to sign on to the project. Now, there's something else involved here that people probably need to know about. So what were they talking about? There's a program called the EB-5 visa program. What it does, it allows immigrants, very, very wealthy, potential immigrants a path to a green card. They've got to invest more than $500,000 in a project that allegedly creates jobs in the United States. So basically, they're saying to people, you can take advantage of this program, which is a very questionable program. We're going to get into that anyway, where really, really rich people can allegedly invest money. Well, money can change hands from very, very rich people in other countries. I think about 80-some percent of the people that took advantage of this program in the last few years were very wealthy Chinese. But money changes hands from them to a shady program in America called the EB-5 visa program. And in return, they get a green card.
So they don't get a green card, by the way. They get like a packet
they
of
get,
them.
For their whole, basically, they get their whole, for the they whole family. Their whole family. My whole point family, being this, yeah. Once again, we're seeing what is commonly referred to in its simplest form, influence peddling. When you say, hey, everybody, you can do this, you can be, oh, by the way, my brother's Barack Obama. Just throwing that out there. Not that it really means anything.
Is that true?
My brother's Barack. Well, no, it's actually not. And if he were, if he was, he wouldn't be happy with me for the things I've said over the last couple of years. But, you know, come on. You're not name dropping saying, I once was in a taxi with Robert De Niro. You're saying, invest. And my brother is in the administration. And here's I'll end by saying this. Let's not forget that about a month or so ago, Lee and I on this very program talked about Jared Kushner and his wife, Ivanka Trump, sitting down to dinner with the Chinese president and working out a deal so that they could get trademark rights to their products in China. Do you think maybe, I'm just going to throw this out there, Lee, do you think maybe there could be some influence peddling going on here with the Kushners?
Well, and people can go back into the archives. If you go to the Radio Sputnik website, you can go to the archives for Fault Lines, and you can find those stories that we've done. We've been talking about Ivanka. We've been talking about Jared Kushner. We're ahead of the curve on this. But let me just go back to that bookmark for a second, because I know a lot about EB-5, right. But let me talk about that in a second. But you know why Jared Kushner took over the family business?
That's a good one.
Do you know why?
Because he was a really smart businessman. That's what I'm thinking. He was brilliant, and he earned it.
But there was
the old-fashioned way. Right?
There was a reason. His father, Charles Kushner, was running the Kushner Company.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I know where you're going.
Well, yeah, but so why did Jared have to take over?
His father took a vacation.
He did. He took a little bit. He went upstate for a little bit. So what happened was Charles Kushner was one of the biggest Democrat donors in the state of New Jersey, political donors, almost all Democrats. And he was being investigated for possible election violations. And Charles Kushner was worried that his sister, not this one, but that another sister, this is Charles Kushner's daughter. This is Jared Kushner's sister.
Right.
But Charles Kushner was worried that his sister and her husband might, you know, testify against him. So he did what anybody would do.
That's a valid worry if you're a crooked person.
It is a valid worry. So he did what anybody would do, which is he set his brother-in-law up with a hooker and then videotaped it. Now, of course.
Well, who hasn't done that?
Today?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly right. So that's what Charles Kushner did. By the way, Trump used to talk about the best people. He's going to bring the best people. This is the best people. Now, Charles Kushner got busted for this by Chris Christie, by the way, and had to go upstate for a little while. And so that's why I don't think they mentioned that to the people in Beijing and Shanghai seeing this presentation. So let's, aside from that sleazery.
You don't think she said, and now that my father's out of prison, he's going to do a fine job running the country? You don't think she said that? She said that, you don't think she said, my brother is in the administration. My father, whose nickname is prisoner number 417509.
Well, he's out of prison now, and he's running the Kushner Company, and they're doing this. Now, here's the reason this is going to be a scandal with some legs, I think. Number one, you've got the left reporting on it. Washington Post, New York Times.
Well, I wish the Washington Post and New York Times were left. I'm left.
No, they are. They're certainly not right. They're broadly left.
Well, they sure hate Bernie, and they sure hate us Bernie bros. To be on the left, they sure hate the left.
Well, they're
establishment tools is what they are.
You couldn't call them Republican sites. They're clearly Democrat.
I bet you John McCain and Lindsey Graham love them.
So, no, they don't.
But they're favorable.
I bet they don't. No, they do not love them. So, the Washington Post and the New York Times are covering this, but this is also an issue that Trump supporters care about quite a bit. Breitbart News, when I was there, we had covered this quite a bit. And I know Steve Bannon knows why the EB-5. We covered the EB-5 issue. In fact, I will point out that Breitbart News reported last year for a site that's supposedly in the tank for Trump. We reported, Joel Pollack, my former colleague over there, reported during the 2016 election, guess who else was involved in an EB-5?
Of course, Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. And we reported that at Breitbart. Joel Pollack reported that. It's up on my site, thepopulist.us. I have a whole story on this.
And one quick aside, Donald Trump has made a comment on this particular issue. And what he said was that he's in favor of revisiting the EB-5 program, but instead of like 500,000 to 1 million being the investment, the investment amount needed to get the green card, he thinks that you should increase the number, which from my perspective simply means now from the really, really rich will be able to buy their way in, that only the super duper, you notice we go from really, really to super duper, it'll be even a more exclusive club to raise it. Now, I think it's two people, one Democrat and one Republican, actually. Is it Chuck Grassley and someone else?
Chuck Grassley.
And someone else are proposing to get rid of it because
Chuck Grassley's in favor of getting rid of it.
It's just like one Democrat and one Republican. But the president saying, look, we're going to make it more expensive only means that only the, we'll go from the millionaires being able to get in to only the billionaires being able to buy it.
Well, here's the thing about it, too. The EB-5 program is used, about 85% is Chinese.
Yeah.
So this is a largely in the same way that we have the H-1B visa program, which is to bring tech people in. That is almost all Indians. Okay. It's almost almost all people from India. This EB-5 program is almost all people from China. Now, let's ask a question. If you're in China, how do you get the money where you got to spare $500,000 to do it? And the answer is there's some degree of influence already on the Chinese side, because you don't just get a factory. China's not a free market economy or anything like that where people say it's not a meritocracy exactly. In fact, just a quick aside about China, but it's interesting. China has, they're prosecuting an attorney in China right now. And the attorney admitted that he'd been brainwashed. This just happened. That he'd been brainwashed by Western influence.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is I watched MSNBC a couple months ago and I found out from Rachel Maddow that I was brainwashed by the Russians. And that's why I didn't vote for Hillary. And I didn't know that. So who am I to talk about? I'm a brainwashed Bernie bro.
And then you ended up working for Radio Sputnik. So there you go. Maddow was clearly
the
correct.
Prosecution rests.
She was on to something. But so this is a very Chinese program. And that's significant because of the stuff we've talked about on the show before, which is we know Ivanka Trump's got ties to China. In fact, many of her products, her handbags and shoes, very popular in China. And she was just granted the same night that Donald Trump was meeting with President Xi from China. Lo and behold, coincidentally, just happened.
Serendipitously.
Right. Ivanka gets her like 7 or 8 copyrights issued in China.
It only normally takes 18 months. She was only 18 months sooner than it normally takes, like 18 seconds.
And the problem with having your copyrights renewed in China is an hour later you want to get them renewed again. So here's the point, though. It's a little Chinese food joke for you there. So here's the point, though. What's happening, we also know that Donald Trump, for example, switched himself from saying that China was a currency manipulator to saying, they're not, currency manipulation, not so much.
Sounds like Jared Kushner's manipulates Chinese currency right into his pocket.
Well, he does. And this is the thing. We know that Kushner is involved. Now, the White House is saying, again, I was in the White House today. There was a question about this from the media. There was one question about it, which was, okay, good. That's one. And by the way, there was a reporter from Hong Kong who was there. Because I did a little stand-up. I report for this thing called Next News Network. I did a stand-up, and I was talking about EB-5, and then this reporter woman was like, oh, I'm doing something on EB-5, too. And I said, well, I'm going to listen. She said, well, it's going to be in Chinese. So she was a
Hong Kong. You can still listen.
Shy, and I did listen, and it was
in Chinese.
It was in Chinese, so it was beautiful, but I didn't understand any of it. But she's from Hong Kong, and she was doing a report about it. But there was a question about it, and Spicer kind of punted, okay? Spicer said, well, you'd have to ask the Kushner companies about that. Well, here's the thing. Yes, except once the media figures out that Trump, and again, this is reported in Breitbart last year, and it's up on the populist.us right now, that Trump used the EB-5 program for this thing called Bay Street.
Yeah.
It's another Jersey building. Then some questions are going to come up about it. And what I'm going to tell you is this EB-5 thing. I first learned about it a few years ago, 2014. I was up in South Dakota working on the Senate race. And the EB-5 program, which is full of fraud and full of corruption, which is why they want to get rid of it. At all, here's a hint. Again, I like to tell people what to Google because I don't want you to take my word for something.
That sounds like a full of fraud and corruption. Is that kind of like a Jared Kushner dinner party?
I don't know. I'm sure it's full of yummy food, though, because, by the way, the steaks at the Trump Hotel are fantastic. Not that you'd know because you're...
No, I'm not going to the Trump Hotel. Plus, I don't eat steaks.
I know. And you're missing out.
Well, there's something important.
That means more for me.
There's something to
buy one. And then just all have it.
That's a good idea. We'll have to
Thank
work
you.
On that. We'll kick
Thank
that
you.
Around. Run that up the flagpole a little bit. See if anybody salutes. But here's what's important, I think, too, that we haven't mentioned about this story. In reading the story, it's misleading because most of the stories that I've seen in the mainstream media, they kind of imply that the Kushner family was selling visas. If you read the story, it says, have you noticed that? It'll say that the Kushner family was saying, give us $500,000, you can get a green card. They don't come out and say that, but it's inferred or implied when in fact, that's not true. I mean, I'm not defending them, but people need to know the truth. They didn't sell these. This is
but
a
this
program.
This is the way these things get
that,
sold.
Right.
Yeah, this is a
program
legal program.
That has
yeah.
been around a long time, that has been questioned by a lot of people that know about it.
Yes.
And the one good thing that can happen now is that this program can come out, hopefully, if they're not able to mislead people into thinking that they were just selling these visas, and people will realize there are a lot of very, very wealthy people and powerful companies that are using this. In fact, there was an instance that I'm familiar of where there was an attorney who basically took the money that he got from these Chinese investors and
yes.
he bought yachts and mansions yep. and all kinds of stuff. They also do things like they'll claim that a particular area is an impoverished area so that the foreign investment should go here and it'll be like a really rich area. You know, they just play so many games with this that it is nothing but an area where super wealthy people from around the globe, now in mostly China, but wherever, 85% from China, can take their money. And they can buy a visa and they can buy access that a poor or middle class person who may have a good reason to come here, they get rejected. If you're rich, you can get in. If you're not rich, you can't get in.
Well, and here's the thing about it, too. Like I say, all you have to do is Google EB-5 fraud or EB-5 scandal, and you'll find a lot of them. You'll find the stuff in South Dakota that I was aware of up there. Mike Rounds, who's the current senator from South Dakota, Mike Rounds was waist deep in this EB-5 scandal up there. It was used. We tried to run an ad against him about it, and it was used against him by the Democrat, Rick Weiland, who ran against him as well, because it's a big scandal. Now, Rounds just ducked it completely, and Rounds is here in Washington and probably wouldn't like to see me if we were at the Trump Hotel together. He's not a fan. He's not a fan of mine. Let me put it
probably
that way.
Probably wouldn't want to hear this program either.
And he's a Republican. I mean, again, Rounds is a Republican. South Dakota is a very, very corrupt state, and it's completely run by Republicans. South Dakota shows the danger of one-party rule. But this EB-5 program, it wasn't just a scandal in South Dakota. It's been a scandal in Vermont, in California, in Nevada, in all sorts of places. Because it's picking winners and losers. And this is why people on the left and right, this is the essence of globalism.
Yeah.
Selling citizenship to the United States, selling United States citizenship to people based on not their entrepreneurial skill. You see what I'm saying? In
right.
other words, I'm okay with being a meritocracy. I'm actually fine with that. I'm actually fine with countries like New Zealand who don't make it easy to immigrate. Countries like New Zealand, for instance, say, if you've got a degree or whatever, I'm fine with that, actually. I want the best and brightest from around the world. That's what I'd like. I don't like the fact that we have an immigration lottery, for instance. And by the way, the number of immigrants we have in this country right now is stupidly high, but that's another thing. But just based on investing, not in any business, but in these government-approved businesses, this is government picking winners and losers.
Well,
and
here's one other part about that. You know what it is? Another part about that, and we may disagree on immigration, but I think the other part that oh, I lost my train of thought. But whatever the case may be,
let's
go
just
back.
Say we agree on immigration.
We agree on something. No, we don't agree on immigration.
Okay.
So let's go back to Auckland, New Zealand.
That would work.
Go back to New Zealand, Auckland. You were in Auckland, weren't you?
I've been to Auckland. Yeah, I didn't go to the South Island. I was in Auckland. I was in Devonport, right across from Auckland. But it was lovely.
Right.
I was looking at immigrating. Let me tell you, I was looking at immigrating there a few years ago because they were looking for visual effects artists. This was in the wake of the Lord of the Rings films.
They don't have all the poisonous snakes and stuff like they do in Australia.
Not
do
at
they?
All. In fact,
they don't have any, do they?
They don't have any. No, it's Australia's got the most dangerous animals, and New Zealand's got the least most dangerous
animals. New Zealand's the place for me. I can understand going there.
But they were looking for visual effects artists at the time, and I looked into immigrating to see what it would be like. And it's a lovely country, and but it was hard. You like if you have a doctorate, they do it differently. But I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with that. This is not that. And I urge anybody who's trying to figure this scandal, look into EB-5 yourself. Start to read some articles. You'll find a lot of them on the left and right, very critical of this program, as they should be, because this is really the essence of globalism and the essence of elitism, the opposite of populism.
And, you know, they come up with this phony requirement, and it's that you have to create at least 10 jobs. Right. But the reality is the program can be so manipulated and there's like no way of checking and no enforcement, method that it ends up simply being people plopping down a check to a company or individuals who will verify that they're doing all the things that are required that they aren't really doing.
Well, it's the old Democrat trick of doing well while doing good, but we'll talk about that some other time.
What's that, the old Republican trick? Oh, by the way, we have a great time here on the show. And we will be back tomorrow at the same time. Lee and I, we got big things to talk about. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.